Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Addis, will join you for the second and third segment of the program today, of course, with James Corbett of the Corbett Report, as they do each week. And today is Thursday, January 14th, 2016. And once again, welcome to the program. You know, I can't remember. It's been a real long time. So I'm going to say in 21 years, since I've been doing this, I think today is the first day that I just didn't want to show up for work. But then again, after looking at the markets, because I follow the, you know, the first thing I do when I open my eyes in the morning is I turn on the financial news. I want to see what, you know, what the markets have done, what gold and silver is, what the futures are doing and so forth. And I'll tell you what, I didn't even want to get to work today, but you can't let those SOBs get you down. You have to fight back. So it was a good day here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And so it was a good day that I showed up. It was a good thing. But sometimes you just try to make sense of it all. And when trying to make sense, it just confirms what kind of world that we live in today. I mean, there's like no rhyme or reason, no sense. And there's just so much chaos. And this is why I always go back to the fundamentals of things, because it's the fundamentals that provide truth and the reality. And you need to stay focused on the truth and the reality, and that makes everything else that we see, whether there's big changes or things we don't understand or haven't quite figured it out yet, what they're doing, what the elite, what the evil people are doing. You know, it gives us know what the end page is going to be. We know what the last chapter is. Doesn't matter what happens between chapter one and, you know, and the last chapter. We know how it started and we know how it ends. Those are the fundamentals. And the end is based on the first chapter of how it happens. So we get this. And with that, gold today, actually, it's off its lows. So it did have a little bit of a reverse here in late afternoon trading, but gold is down on the New York spot, down 1610, 1610 at 1078. Had a low of 1070. So we had a big drop first thing this morning, about 25 bucks, and now it came back about 10. Silver is down 32 cents at 1394. Platinum was down 12, 800. And 39, platinum, for whatever reason, managed to be up 6 points at $495. The USDX today up 0.14, 99.07. Crude oil was also up today, 0.63, but still hovering around the 31.11 number. Paper markets today, they had a little bit of a reversal, but they were up at 1.02%. The Dow finished at 1.41%, up 227 points, 16,378. The NASDAQ was up 2% at 46.15, so it gained 88 points. The S&P up 1.67%, 1921, gained 31 points. 10-year yield, 2.10%, that was up slightly. The euro is 109, so the euro is really bracing itself at that, around that level, 107, 109, but it was down 0.16. European and Asian markets, so Japan was down almost 3%, Hong Kong basically unchanged, Germany was down 1.6%. And let's see where the fear factor is today, just for the, let's see what emotion really is driving the fear factor. Well, that number is at 17, yesterday it was 14, so I would think that you'll see, depending on what the markets do tomorrow. But again, this is just a blip on the day. I mean, hey, the Dow draw has, is down significantly since the first of the year. We figured it would eventually have a turnaround, and certainly today is that day. Tonight we have the GOP debate going on the Fox Business Channel with Marie Bartiromo, two different tiers. I think what's interesting about that whole debate is you have Bush that's now in third place. Really, how does that work? Really just goes to show you what the elite want, who the elite want, and you just can't write Bush off. I mean, I can't even, it's kind of like Hillary. You just can't write her off. She has no business being there. I think what's disturbing most of all, watching people's notes, and, I go on Facebook every now and then, and you see everybody complaining about Obama and how awful he is, how he destroyed this country, blah, blah, blah. But it just shocks me that these conservative people are now liking Bernie Sanders. It's just, I walk away puzzled. I just can't believe that the American, do the elite think that we're that stupid? Maybe we are. Well, we're not. I'm not. I know you listeners aren't. But the general populace out there, they're so easily conned. It just floors me. It's like, nobody even does any research on these people. And it's just like, I like him. It's frustrating. It's truly frustrating. And as you see our country just get stripped, just get wiped out. And yet these people out there don't have a clue with what's going on. I wanted to talk about a call I received this morning from a friend in Canada. And, I've known John and his wife for a very long time. We visited, I'd gone up to Canada to visit them. He told me today it's been 10 years. And what he said to me, and this is pretty close to what he said from my memory. He talked about our government down here, that he says they're really giving it to you and the people. He says the Canadian currency is tanking. And he wanted me to remind my listeners that he sold some gold yesterday and he was paid $1,600. And he says the U.S. dollar is the only currency in the world that has any strength. And he says, and it's destroying you guys. He says, it's stripping you, the country, of anything that is left. He said, the government is keeping the dollar so strong, and as I said, to gut America, to continue to complete the gutting of America. He says, it will continue to eliminate any competition. Who will buy any American products? Who will buy any American agriculture? He says, when everything else around the world is cheaper. corn exports in the U.S., the biggest producer, they slowed as the stronger dollar entices buyers to go elsewhere for cheaper supplies. And he is absolutely correct. And the folks in Canada, they're having a very difficult time as their currency continues to drop. And it wasn't that long ago, it was on parity with the dollar. And if you look at some of the what the prices that they pay, $8 for cauliflower, $3 for cucumbers, their layoffs are piling up as their currency continues to get weaker and weaker. So the lower currency certainly is having a pronounced effect on the Canadians' grocery bills. And Canada imports about 80% of its fresh fruits and vegetables. And when the loonie slides, of course, these prices for goods soar. And, you know, your lower income households, they have a tendency to spend a larger portion of their income on food. So, again, it becomes very difficult for folks to gather up their goods. And I had another listener and friend who sent me a prices for a, what they did is they gathered various entities to provide a basket or cost of living. It includes like housing, food, gas, stamps, the Dow Jones, a movie ticket, college tuition, wages. And they've created this basket to show what people paid in 2008 versus 2015. And it's broken down per year. And I'm going to put this in our newsletter next week. So if you'd like to have a copy of this, you can go to our website, dgscoins.com, sign up for our weekly newsletter, and you'll receive this on Monday. Because we send our newsletter out every Monday. So this gives you an idea of what we're really paying. It's what the real world is paying. Our world, you and me, the world that we live in, what we pay for products. Since 2008, from May of 2008, the real world price basket of goods shows an increase of over 40%. 40%. But yet, and of course this will vary based on the size of your family income and so forth. And it does show a slight decrease from certain years, from 2014 to 2015, there was a slight decrease. But over a period of time, which was really minuscule, the basket of these, the cost of living for 2015 was $73.50. For 2014, was $76.75. So it did decrease a little bit, but we're talking from 2008 during our great recovery. And the numbers are staggering. I think coffee, I just picked out a few that just shows an incredible increase. Coffee in 2008 was $5.49. And I think that was for a, and it's broken down to the amount of coffee. This is a can of coffee. Folgers, November of 2015, that same coffee was $10.63. Tide soap powder, $5.98 in 2008, $11.76 in November. We all know eggs went up. We all know milk went up. We all know bread and potatoes went up. Dozen eggs, $2.77 as of November 2015. April 2008 was $1.29. So 40% since 2008. I don't think we saw wages go up 40%. I don't think the American people were able to offset that gain in 40%. of the price increase. And these are very basic staples that we have that we purchase at the grocery store, toilet paper, chicken soup, flour, ground beef. So again, another sign of how this, the real world numbers certainly don't match what mainstream and the numbers are telling you. So again, he wanted me to relate to you that when our dollar collapses, and it will collapse, it's just a matter of time, because this country is we may as well shutter up the doors, because we're out of business, folks. With the strong dollar, people are going elsewhere to buy. That only relates to loss of jobs. I mean, you're going to see, and again, when they give out the job reports, well, what came out today that I wanted to talk to you about? Oh, that the jobless claims, the number of Americans filing for first-time unemployment benefits climbed last week, a jump that could be due to the holiday season. Okay, so now they're saying that the reasons that we have these jobless claims is because of the holiday season data volatility rather than a deteriorating labor market. Oh, okay. They said that the U.S. jobless claims, a proxy for the layoffs, rose to a seasonally adjusted 284,000 in the week ending January 9th. It could reflect layoffs. This is what the mainstream media is telling you. Last week's rise could reflect layoffs at retailers, warehouse distribution centers, and other holiday-related jobs. Of course, you have to blame the holiday. And, of course, the unusually warm weather in December also boosted job gains in construction, which would reverse as winter kicks in, and therefore you would show more than usual. Well, why don't they claim the 292,000 jobs created in December was due to the hiring of the same individuals that were getting laid off this month? You know, so, you know, it's good to use the retail for holidays as people are getting laid off as the job claims, jobless claims, but we can't use those same people for the increase of jobs that are being created. I mean, they really do think you're stupid, and they really do hope that we buy these numbers. But there are some signs of weakness, such as a low labor force participation, and there's no and the wage growth, if there's any at all, that the numbers don't jive, that it doesn't show that things are doing well, and it doesn't show that how can people survive when you have a 40% increase of your mainstay staples from 2008. You know, they also talked about a low claims number could reflect a population of long-term unemployment. I think that has a major implication as far as a low claims number. People aren't eligible anymore to file new claims. The states are they're falling off the records. You know, in addition to they're hopeless. They feel hopeless. There's no point in looking for a job because there isn't anything out there that they can make. And you know, they just don't work anymore. People aren't being counted anymore. It's kind of like they just disappear. So again, the dollar will collapse. The dollar needs to collapse, as all world currencies have. And gold will skyrocket, as it is everywhere else. And again, he sold his gold in Canada yesterday for $1,600 when we're looking at $1,100 here and below that here in the States. And, you know, another interesting point in that basket was the rental income. It's incredible what the income. In 2008, house rent was $800. From a Wall Street Journal, they're talking about now it stands, most economists expect 2016 to be strong for the rents. U.S. apartment rent now stands at nearly $1,180, $1,200. Again, they're not going away. Things are not going down. Eventually they will when the system collapses. And our country collapses. So don't get discouraged by these lower gold prices. Take advantage of the fact that you have another day to rearrange your portfolios, to take advantage of the lower gold prices, because they're not going to last forever. I'm out of my 20 minutes. Tomorrow, I believe we're going to have Rob West on to sort of talk maybe more about the bonds. And he'll be joining us for a few segments in the program. So make sure you join us tomorrow. Alfred and James Corbett will be joining you right after these short breaks.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the3w's.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, but I'm just back from a little three-day getaway to the hot tropical climes of Okinawa, so I'm a bit out of the news loop, so I hope you'll go easy on me today.
No mercy. No mercy. I've got an article here from Salon Magazine. It was published about 10 days ago. And the headline was, A Year of War, 10 Destructive Armed Conflicts the U.S. Fueled in 2015. Now, what's interesting to me about this article is 10 days ago, 2 weeks, end of the year, There was a lot of concern about war breaking out. People were talking about World War II and war breaking out, more serious wars in the Middle East and the rest of that. And I'm wondering if you think that we are still as concerned with war today as we were just a couple of weeks ago, or are we more focused on the price of crude oil and what's happening in the stock markets on a global basis?
Are those topics really separable? Yeah, of course they feed into each other, but where do people's concern lie? I think, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends who you're talking to and what circles you're moving in, but I imagine most of the average people out there are more concerned with the things that affect their bottom line and their everyday lives than they are about the still somewhat abstract idea of war. It's still abstract for a lot of people, at least in the comfy West, that only has to deal with the paying for the wars, but not really experiencing them. So I think that's probably, as always, it generally comes down to domestic issues and what you're paying at the gas pump or what you're paying at the grocery store, more so than it does concern for fellow human beings.
Do you remember that movie Dr. Strangelove?
I do.
There's a scene where they've brought the Russian ambassador down into the American command and control center. And even though the world is going to end in about 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours, he's got his little camera and he's taking pictures,
right?
Secret pictures. I mean, that's kind of what we're dealing with. What is the fundamental problem right now? Well, we're taking snapshots. We're in the control room and we're worried about stock markets, price oil. Is there a fundamental problem we can point at and say, this is what we really need to be watching?
I think there is. I mean, I guess it depends on sort of how abstractly we want to treat this. But I would say that the fundamental problem is that there is has always been and is always, and well, I don't want to say presumably always will be. I would hope there won't always be. But there has always been a ruling oligarchy of some sort in every generation, in every society, throughout human history, since the beginning of recorded history and civilization. There has always been ruling families and, of course, always a ruling sort of power infrastructure behind them that enables that structure. And every time in history that ruling power elite gets too greedy and start plundering the populace too much, things start to come to a head. And I really think that we're arriving at that sort of spot in, at least, as I say, in the Western developed countries, where for a long time, of course, there have been certain elite power movers and shakers who have benefited a lot from the creation of the American empire in our current age. But at the same time, the average people were benefiting from that quite a bit as well. I mean, there was a time not too long ago where a single person could go out and earn enough for a family to live on for a year and have a few weeks of vacation and all of that. That obviously is passing people by as the economy continues to tank. And I think part of that is just the plundering that's going on at a level that hasn't been seen for a long time. People in living memory probably don't remember something quite like this, where it seems that the discrepancy between the ultra rich and the ultra poor is growing wider and vaster, and more people are falling under that poverty line every day. So I think that is really a concern, because, of course, when that happens and people start to get angry, that's when you have the sort of revolutionary temperament rising. And I think that's one of the things that we can identify, not only in American politics, but certainly in American politics right now. And if I was going to take a snapshot, it's the sort of growing tensions that are bubbling on all sorts of different levels, not just political or economic, but even social levels, that's really starting to bubble up to the surface. And that's partly explaining things like the Trump-Sanders phenomenon, the polarization, the real desire for something very different and very extreme that's coming along the line right now. And I think that's going to inform everything that's happening this year. Certainly, as I say again, in the Western developed countries, I think that's going to be really the driving factor of a lot of things, including, of course, the 2016 presidential selection circus.
I have two questions on this. You talk about a group of families, an oligarchy that has, it's part of human nature, perhaps, that this happens. There have been families that have been running this world to the extent it can be run for centuries. The question is, are they the same families today as they were 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago? Or are we looking at a new group of families? We've got some nouveau riche up here who've they invented some sort of a computer program in their garage. They're suddenly billionaires, and now they're trying to push the world. They've decided to push the world left, right, or sideways, and they're the ones that are responsible for going too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question, and I can't really answer that definitively, but I don't think there are many people on this planet who can answer that definitively. Mm-hmm. I know there are the people who talk about the 13 bloodlines of the Illuminati and things of that nature. I don't have the paperwork on that, so yeah. I you'll forgive my incredulity. But I think there are certain nexuses of family trees where we can obviously see power grouped. But I do think that there are new people who are added to that mix. And I think that fundamentally what drives that and binds these different people, including the new people who come into the club, so to speak, is an ideology. It's an ideology that drives these people. And I think that's interestingly, that was reflected in something that came together just earlier this year from Mark Zuckerberg, who people might remember is the founder of Facebook. He started Facebook back in 2004 when he was at Harvard, and immediately attracted the attention of a lot of venture capital investors, including Peter Thiel, connected in with that Incutel CIA venture capital matrix. The money didn't directly come from the CIA, but at any rate, there was some very interesting attention that got shone on Facebook right away. And of course, Mark Zuckerberg got rocketed up into the billionaire status club very quickly. And for such a remarkably young person, I don't know how old he is today, something like 28 years old, but he's been a billionaire for several years now. It's quite remarkable. And interestingly, of course, people might remember at the end of last year, he just started the new Zuckerberg Initiative, which was initially there was all sorts of media coverage about this as, he's donating 90% of his money to charity. That was the way it was framed. But in fact, when you look into it, this Zuckerberg Initiative that he's founding is not even just a philanthropic charity umbrella organization like the Rockefeller Foundation or the Ford Foundation, but is in fact, I think, specifically being formed as an investment vehicle to invest in various new technologies or things that he think will help steer society in the right way or whatever kind of pablum he wants to put on top of that. So it's on its face a business venture, but it's being framed as some sort of great philanthropic move. And we'll never guess who he's taking as inspiration for some of the ideas that he wants to use as the founding ideology for this. Well, one of them is Henry Kissinger. That's right. He just tweeted out or put on his Facebook a couple of few weeks ago that he wants to read World Order by Henry Kissinger this year as a way of helping to understand how to shape peace in the world or something of that nature. So it always revolves around the same people, and it always comes back to the same ideas, the same ideology, the same founding drive of these people, which is really a kind of megalomania that they want to structure the society. They want to engineer society top down and monopolize every area of industry and every area of our lives, really, that they can on the way to do that. And Facebook is just one slice of that, one example of how that is done. And it's a worrying example because, of course, now it really is one of the largest websites on the internet, and most a billion users or something of that on that order is quite a remarkable amount of consolidation of information in the hands of someone who has those interesting connections to shady venture capital funding that rocketed him into that status in the club.
Now, this just goes to show what happens when you give billions of dollars to liberals. You don't have to worry about them as long as they're impoverished, but oh my God, give them some money. Next thing you know, they've decided to rule the world. And that's where you used the term ideology a little earlier when we were talking about what these families were doing. There was an ideology up there. I wonder if that ideology was just a matter of, well, let's take care of us and not make the peons too mad. We'll live large and the rest of them can scrap for, you know, and struggle for whatever they've got. But we won't take so much to really make them angry. We are now moving. If we ever had an ideology, if they ever had an ideology that they were pushing up at the top, how long has that ideology been conducive to merely maintaining the power and the wealth they have And when did it shift over? And they say, wait a second, we're going to make these people join the New World Order.
It seems to me that it has always, or at least for the centuries or so that it's really trackable in these kinds of documents that these people write, it has always been that long-term goal to consolidate power completely, to have a world governmental structure of some sort, a world system that will be controlled by these players. I think that's always been the goal. I just don't think it's been really feasible as a goal for the centuries that we can track this back. I think it has only been in our era that it's really come into view that this is something that's actually possible. It's feasible. It's technologically possible at this point, given the types of, you know, information collection systems of Facebook and others, that this sort of idea that you can track and control and trace everything that goes on at every level of society is actually becoming reality. And I think it still has a ways to go before it gets to that point, but at least we can sort of see the general outline of that taking shape. So I think the ideology has always been directed at that. I just think that it's sort of coming into view now. It's taking on more of a particular form, and it's being shaped by some of these people who are getting let into the club, the Bill Gateses or Mark Zuckerbergs of the world.
When we have this possibility suddenly here, can we look at this as in the past, these families, whoever they are? I wish I knew who they were. They even were. We should. Seems we ought to know. I've seen some people say there's 350 families, 450 something. You think you'd know who they are? I don't know who they are. Maybe someone does. I don't know. You'd think that information would be available on the internet or whatever. But they've been talking, perhaps, about a new world order, in the same sense that a lot of people talk about their salvation as a Christian. It's a religion where we are anticipating some sort of reward someplace off in the future, but not right now. Once they get to the point where it becomes, oh my gosh, we could do this, we've been talking about it for maybe centuries, but it was always sometime in the future. Now all of a sudden it's possible. Does that possibility breed a certain amount of fanaticism in these families up at the top where they say, oh my God, we've got to push the people into this thing now before we could just talk about it and take some money and live large. Now we have to force people. Now we have to become tyrannical. You see what I'm saying? Does the possibility force them to shift from what was a peculiar religion in a sense to now all of a sudden they have to, you know, Sieg Heil, you know, start marching, bring out the tanks, whatever we have to do and make this happen.
Mm. Well, again, I can only speculate about that, but it certainly does. It does make a lot of sense in that manner. And in a way, I think it would be better for us, the people who are not in that club, if that is the tack that they are taking, if they get foolish and try to move too quickly and consolidate power too much, because then there will be a backlash against that agenda. I think that the smartest thing for them to do would be to continue on the track that they've been going. And a few decades down the line, a generation or two from now, can you imagine how much further into that control grid we will have been placed, so that it would not even really take much of a flip of a switch to actually implement the full-on control grid. People would already have put themselves into it. I think events like 9/11 have caused a lot of people to step back and take a look at the agenda and see what's happening and see that there's something wrong, including myself. I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the information I started looking into with 9/11. So I think those types of moves can in a way be a sort of desperate or maniacal act on the part of the social engineers. And I think that's why you have interesting events like Zbigniew Brzezinski a couple of years ago, or back in 2007, I want to say, was in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee warning about possible false flag attacks being blamed on Iran as the neocons' next move to start a war with Iran at that time, because you had certain factions of the power elite warring with other factions, saying, no, you're going too quickly. People are getting taking notice, waking up. This is a bad thing. We have to go more slowly. So you get some of that infighting. I hope that does tear down this structure. I'm not necessarily betting that's going to take place, but I hope that there are people who are chomping at the bit a little too much with this coming into view.
Speaking of Brzezinski, he made a comment back during the Bush debacle in Iraq, George W., the second invasion where Bush got stranded. He thought, oh, we had victory, you know, mission accomplished, and the rest of that in a couple of weeks. And it turned out he got caught in the Iraqi problem, and Brzezinski said something like, he didn't say you moron, but that was the tone of the comment that I heard. You moron, you've set the New World Order back by 20 years. I don't know if you recall that comment.
I vaguely do.
Yeah. If that was true, that Bush had inadvertently set the timetable back by 20 years or thereabouts, are they trying to make up for lost time? Was that an accurate assessment? They said, my God, we've got to make up for Bush's mistake, and we've got to recapture those 20 years. Is that what's pushing them?
Well, again, I think it's too easy to lump them all together.
Yeah.
I think that shows that there are splits, and the neocons are just one of the splits, and they're still around. There are still neocons. They just don't like that label anymore, but they're still there. They're still pushing for their own agenda. Brzezinski represents a different faction. There are other factions besides. So I think it's really a question of who can gain control, ultimate control of the system, so that they can guide it in the way they want. And I'm sure there are factions that are trying to rush it along, as well as ones trying to put on the brakes.
All right, let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis, here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%. Of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addis with my guest, James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. Here on Financial Survival, we've got a caller, Rick, he says Pensatucky. Apparently he lives exactly on a state line. He must be got a house located exactly on the state line. Hello, Rick.
Hello there, Mr. Alfred Addis. So
yes,
honored
sir.
And pleased I get to be on the phone while you have another guy I admire. Mr. Jim Corbett. Actually, it's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And you gotta check your geography. Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Kentucky—they're not connected. At any rate, I wanted to ask them. Oh, actually, I wanted to say too. I thank you for setting me straight. I also am a man made in God's likeness and image, and I don't know what that means exactly. But thanks to you, I am that, whether I understand it or not, and it pleases me. But the question I had was for your guest, and that is, Mr. Corbett, I hear such a lot of things about the nation of China's stock markets and how they have had holidays recently in the last couple of days, etc. And I'm not clear how, you know, that jives with the so-called, you know, New York Stock Exchange and all. They don't seem to be in agreement. And I apologize. I only just began listening, so I don't know whether or not you've mentioned either of those things. But I thank you for taking my call, both, and God bless you both.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you very much, Rick. Yes, the Chinese stock markets are continuing to do fairly poorly, and every sign that there is not going to be much improvement there anytime soon. In fact, there's an interesting post up right now on Zero Hedge. You can go read. I think it's on the front page still. Last Bubble Standing, talking about how they show an interesting chart of Chinese stocks going down since obviously the middle part of last year, around June, July, when that big stock market rout began. And Chinese bond yield, triple B corporate bond yield, going through the roof. I mean, bond yield is sinking, but the value of the bonds is going up because they're basically just creating a different bubble. So I think there's something very interesting going on there, and it's all related to the Chinese government's trying to prolong the inevitable, which of course is the ramifications of the global commodity slowdown that's going on right now, that is affecting the world's manufacturing center for all intents and purposes, more so than any other economy directly. As to the disconnect between Chinese stock market and New York stock market, well, in fact, I mean, it's not that the New York Stock Exchange or any of the other major indexes are having a great time in the United States right now. In fact, they're all down on the year. It's one of the worst starts to the year in a long time. So I don't think there's any happiness going on there. But I mean, we would expect a little bit of disconnect, especially since the U.S. dollar is doing so well compared to all the other currencies, that was one of the reasons China's trying to depeg from them. We would expect a somewhat different outlook for their respective stock exchanges. But again, that's only to the extent that stock exchanges these days actually reflect anything in the productive economy, which I think we've shown recently is not really the case anymore. So take it for what it's worth. But I don't have a particularly bullish outlook for either Chinese or American stock market indexes in the coming year. As we've talked about before, we're at the end of a 7-year bull run here, so it's just a question of when that bull run comes to an end, and I think it's going to be sooner than later.
If you had to choose, which do you think is more important, more significant, more better able to control or at least influence the economy? Is it the stock market, Dow Jones, for example, or is it the bond market?
I don't know how to separate them, really, because I think stocks obviously tend to bubble when people are routed out of bonds, because bonds are extremely low yield, so they get corralled into rallying into stocks, and then the reverse happens in downward outputs. So one would expect, I mean, again, all things being equal, that if and when the equity bubble starts to pop this year and we start to see some real downturn, that that money would rush into U.S. treasuries as, you know, the traditional standby. But maybe that's not the case anymore, because, again, treasuries yields are ridiculously low at this point. And there's been a bond bubble that's been blown up over the last several years, as well as the equity bubble. So I think in this case, I think we're going to see something very different, and I don't know what that will look like exactly, but it's going to be mayhem when and if this bubble really starts to pop.
You don't think that we are looking at the beginning, the official beginning of the big pop? That's not what we've seen. Prices start, Dow Jones is down 1,100 points in the first week of the year, down another 200 points altogether in the second week of the year, 1,300 points thereabouts in the first 2 weeks of the year. You don't think that's the big pop? All right.
It could be the start. I guess time will tell. It absolutely could be the beginning of the end. I don't see how stocks could go above where they were at their record peaks. I just don't see it going back up at this point, barring some sort of very strange fortuitous event. I can't even imagine what kind of event that would be. But yes, I don't see it beating its past top. So I mean, ultimately, this is the top of one way or another. There may be some bounces here and there along the way, but I think the general direction is down.
Yeah. The question is not just, you know, whether the general direction is down is not necessarily catastrophic.
Yes.
It's not good for everybody, but the question is how fast does it go down?
Exactly.
If it goes down over a period of several years, well, we can get, it's like cooking frogs or whatever, we can get used to the warm water. But if it drops all of a sudden, then we have an entirely different kind of problem, including panic. Right? What do you see? Some people think we're going to see a sudden crash. Some people think we're going to see a gradual crash. Where do you come in on that?
I don't think there is a gradual crash from the heights that we've gotten through this QE madness that's gone on. And I mean, there's just so much that has come from that QE madness of the last several years, including, interestingly enough, the commodities route that's going on right now and the oil price route that's going on right now. Again, you can chart the QE injections of Federal Reserve money and against the crude oil price. And you can see that during QE3 is when it really snapped and all of that malinvestment in oil came home to roost because the oil price was still up, but there was more and more oil coming online. That obviously snaps back to the mean. So now we're starting to see the kickback against that. Again, pretty much everything major that we can see going on in the global economy right now is directly related to the madness we've seen over the last several years. And I just don't think that there's an easy way out of this. And we're being told by the same mainstream talking heads who back in 2005, 2006 were all smiles and happy chipper noises about the housing bubble. We're being told by those same talking heads right now that, there's some headwinds. Things are going to slow down this year, but it's not a bubble. It's not popping. Well, again, trust them as far as you can throw them. I think this is going to go down quickly, maybe not as quickly and maniacally as some people believe it will be, some sort of Mad Max, you know, terror on the streets kind of scenario. But I think there is going to be a rout, and there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be hurt by it.
Well, when we talk about quickly, here's an article from CNN Money, and the headline is Wall Street's disastrous start to 2016 has caused roughly $1 trillion to vanish from the stock market. People went to sleep at the end of the year, December 31st, and they collectively had $1 trillion. And by the 7th of January, they didn't. That's a lot of money to vanish. And it's not just, they're not, according to this headline in the article, they don't say the money was stolen by the Illuminati or the 350 ruling families or whatever. They say it simply vanished. Presto changeo. This is the sort of thing that, to my mind, makes a cataclysmic sudden collapse possible. If they can make $1 trillion disappear a week, how many weeks do we have to go through before all of a sudden everyone is just incredibly impaired? You see what I'm saying?
I certainly do. And I think that should, at the very least, that should raise the red flags in people's minds so that what does that mean to say $1 trillion has been wiped out? $1 trillion from where? Oh, from stocks and, you know, these instruments that are just placeholders for value.
Yep.
So exactly right. I mean, that should set some alarm bells off for a lot of people. The good news, if there is any good news out of this, is that over the last several years, we've really seen a considerable changeover in the makeup of the people holding equities. For the large part, it has has largely been dominated. The last several years of buying has been largely dominated by major institutional investors, yep. not mom and pop investors. So it's going to be them that are on the front line of this, I guess, directly when we're talking about those kind of $1 trillion losses. But obviously that does filter down through the rest of the economy. And unfortunately, if there is anything that the 2007-2008 debacle taught us, it's that if the Wall Street banks are screaming, well, the White House is going to listen to them more so, and the Federal Reserve, perhaps more importantly, are going to listen to them more so than whatever may be happening on Main Street. So, yes, this is a, let's put it this way. Have you ever seen an orderly stampede for a door when there's a, you know, a fire in a theater, or does it tend to be chaos? I mean, I think we know which way this is going to end up.
I mean, I have seen videos of one instance where some rock band had some pyrotechnic devices in some fairly substantial bar. It wasn't a Coliseum or something like that, but fairly substantial bar, and they started the place on fire. And the people were trying to get out the door. It's wrong to laugh at this sort of thing, but the video shows the people trying to get out the door, and they were jammed. They had jammed themselves in the door where they couldn't get through. They had 3-4 people trying to get through the door at the same time, and everybody pushing behind them, and they had corked that door, you know, like a wine bottle, and they could not get out of there.
Well, that's a perfect image for how these bubbles pop. That's what a bubble pop looks like.
It's not just, okay, let's just take a number, and then we're going to go one by one. Sir, you're number one, go on out, and then, sir, number two, number three, going through. It's going to be, and the crash will just plug any narrow neck in the situation, and terrible situation. Let me ask you this. If $1 trillion can vanish from the stock market in a week, was that $1 trillion ever real, or is the reason that $1 trillion can vanish is because it's only illusory, imaginary to begin with? It's not real.
Well, of course. I mean, really, I mean, when you think about it, the only actual real value or wealth in society is not to do with stocks, it's not to do with bonds, it's not even to do with metals or anything of that sort. It is the productive capacity of an economy. It is the things that people actually do to produce things of value for other people. And since we've lost that, it's become so abstracted in this system that's based on these funny money dollars printed out of nothing from banks, you know, lent out as with interest. It's been so abstracted from that actual underlying economy that we can look at, oh, look, the stock market is going up. I guess things are all right. Or, oh, the stock market's going down. Maybe there's a problem. As opposed to looking at the actual fundamental things that are being produced in the economy and looking at, look, manufacturing has been completely eviscerated over the past few decades. Maybe we should be worrying about that. But unfortunately, again, people have been trained. It's just the dog whistle that people listen to. It's the, stocks are going up, stocks are going down. And people have been trained that that's wealth. That is not wealth. Wealth is the actual things that people produce that are of value for the economy. And now that fewer and fewer people are actually employed in the workforce, the labor participation rate is at its lowest point in nearly half a century, I think we can see which way the winds are blowing, and they're not in a good direction.
Yeah. Well, we've only got about 45 seconds left, but just one last question. Did you see the article by Richard Fisher, the former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve, where he said, don't blame China? That the crash that we're seeing in the markets last week, he said, this is attributable. He said it's the Federal Reserve. This is a fault of their policies. Did you see that article?
I did not, but it sounds interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating. I mean, I think it's just revelational, but I guess we're not going to get any deeper into that right now. You can look for it. It was Don't Blame China, a little bit more than that. But if you look for Richard Fisher and Don't Blame China, you'll find the article. James, I want to thank you again for being on the program. Always a pleasure, always interesting, always fun. Hope the audience enjoyed it. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Cormitt. Good night.
work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. Money, money, must